19.2 meter band.
Today is Friday, December 31st. Welcome to VOA's New Year's Eve International Edition. I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, a special program looking back at major developments in 2021.
America's longest war finished. With al-Qaeda long diminished in Afghanistan, President Joe Biden told the Pentagon it was time to bring troops home.
The U.S. ended its longest war in Afghanistan on a chaotic note as the Taliban reclaimed the country. What began as a local conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region exploded into a civil war that left thousands dead and millions displaced.
By the beginning of 2021, the war in the Tigray region of Ethiopia, then more than a month old, had forced tens of thousands of people to flee across the border to Sudan.
And a migrant crisis as thousands of asylum seekers traveled to Belarus and tried to cross into Poland and the European Union. We'll have these stories and more next on this special New Year's Eve's International Edition, prepared in advance. Stay tuned. Major world capitals are set to usher in the new year amid uncertainty over international, regional, and economic and health crises. From Washington to Moscow, Paris to Berlin, Nairobi to Lagos, leaders are hoping the year brings solutions to challenges that tested the boundaries of science and human endurance. While conflicts intensified in some parts of the world, a major conflict ended in Afghanistan. The war in Afghanistan was America's longest, spanning nearly 20 years. The U.S. in 2001 quickly toppled the Taliban government, who had harbored al-Qaeda terrorists responsible for the 9/11 terrorist attack on America. But despite years of international support for Afghanistan, the war's final week saw a Taliban takeover, a chaotic U.S. withdrawal, and a terror attack that left nearly 200 people dead, including 30 U.S. service members. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Barb reports.
America's longest war finished. With al-Qaeda long diminished in Afghanistan, President Joe Biden told the Pentagon it was time to bring troops home. Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby.
The military had, in fact, done what it was sent to do in Afghanistan, which was prevent that place from ever being a safe haven for a terrorist attack or a launching pad for a terrorist attack upon the homeland.
America's military had hoped to leave its Afghan partners with a fighting chance against the Taliban. Instead, the Taliban rolled into Kabul in mid-August, creating panic as U.S. evacuations began at Hamid Karzai International Airport.
There was a lot of chaos. There was a lot of confusion. I mean, the president of Afghanistan himself had just gotten on an airplane and flown out of the country, and nobody saw that one coming.
Afghan forces, trained and equipped by the U.S.-led coalition for 20 years, fell in fewer than 20 days. Some of those forces pointed to a lack of food, ammunition, and air support. Local leaders in areas across the country quickly made deals with the Taliban, forcing others to surrender or flee. Thomas Jocelyn is the editor of the Foundation for Defense of Democracy's Long War Journal.
Despite being at war for 20 years in Afghanistan, nobody really knew anything. They didn't really understand. The U.S. military leadership and political leadership didn't really understand who they were even fighting in Afghanistan, didn't understand the Taliban, didn't understand al-Qaeda, and didn't understand the relationship between those two.
The U.S. helped evacuate 124,000 people in just a few weeks. But that effort was marred by an Islamic State terror attack that killed nearly 200 people, including 13 American service members. Days later, a U.S. drone strike the Pentagon says was meant to hit Islamic State attackers mistakenly killed 10 innocent civilians. Meanwhile,
they won't let us go. They're gassing us and they're shooting at us.
The evacuation left hundreds of American citizens and thousands of Afghan allies behind. Rights groups reported revenge killings of U.S. allies in the months that followed. And the Taliban takeover sparked an economic meltdown. Martin Griffiths is the UN Humanitarian Affairs Chief.
The free fall of the economy is much more violent, severe, and urgent than we feared. We thought we would manage to survive the winter with pure humanitarian assistance. We now know it's not enough.
The UN says Islamic State Khorasan, once limited to small areas in Afghanistan, has now expanded to every province. And the UN says their attacks against the Taliban and civilians have increased fivefold this year. Speaking in an interview with Voice of America, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin vowed to use so-called over-the-horizon capabilities to continue to go after any terrorist in Afghanistan who plan to attack the United States.
That's making sure that that we pay attention to the threats as they evolve. And we will remain focused on that with a laser focus.
But the U.S. military now has only about 1-2% of the capabilities it once had to look into Afghanistan, the head of U.S. Central Command told the Associated Press. That makes the counter-terror mission there even more difficult. Meanwhile, for Afghans, the future under Taliban rule remains uncertain. Zalmay Khalilzad, the former U.S. envoy to Afghanistan, spoke to VOA about the transition.
There are mixed signals, some positive, some not. So we hope that it becomes all positive. The alternative is a repetition of the past, which would be, the suffering of the Afghan people, conflict, interference by outsiders in its affairs.
The world is watching to see if the Taliban will govern effectively and respect human rights, and if terror groups will thrive there again as they plot to attack the West. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
What began as a conflict between the Ethiopian federal government and local militia in the Tigray region in late 2020 exploded into a civil war in 2021. It has forced 2 million people to flee their homes and left hundreds of thousands of people in at risk of famine. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports that the war continues expanding with displacements, ethnic killings, and mass rape in the increasingly devastated region.
By the beginning of 2021, the war in the Tigray region of Ethiopia, then more than a month old, had forced tens of thousands of people to flee across the border to Sudan. Refugees reported ethnic massacres, sexual assaults, and mass arrests. In the months that followed, the humanitarian crisis deepened. More than 1 million people were displaced inside Ethiopia, and aid workers warned of looming famine. The few hospitals not damaged or destroyed in the region were packed with war wounded, including children who had been stabbed, shot, or become victims of newly laid landmines. 11-year-old Goitam lost one leg and now suffers from infection and nightmares. Goitam's father, Gabriel Hannes Atakelti, says his son was taking the goats to graze when he stepped on a landmine. Goitam is too weak to speak. The war broke out in the Tigray region in late 2020 between the federal government and local Tigrayan forces. It quickly expanded to include other regional forces allied on both sides and Eritrean forces fighting with the government. Both sides have been accused of massacres, torture, and other atrocities. Federal Ethiopian and Eritrean forces have also been accused of systematic mass rape. Hundreds of women and girls have come forward, and aid workers say many, many more have not.
All survivors say they raped by militaries.
Mihira Radai is a caseworker for sexual assault victims in Aydar Referral Hospital in Makala, Tigray's regional capital. She says many women who are raped by soldiers are often afraid to come forward, and many others have no access to health care. A national election in June reestablished the authority of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, who then had control of the Tigray region. About a week later, Tigrayan forces recaptured the region, and the war escalated, now engulfing many areas beyond Tigray. Abiy has vowed to crush his enemies.
Access by independent monitors has been a major challenge. Reportedly, many have been...
On December 17th, the United Nations voted to investigate abuses by both sides of the conflict, including the reported mass detentions of as many as 7,000 people, allegedly sympathetic to Tigrayan interests, among them 9 UN workers. In the battered Tigrayan countryside, many say they have seen so much tragedy, they no longer fear arrest. Haftum Gidey, a resident of the war-torn town of Housen, says he no longer fears war or arrest. He has seen too much already. Mass graves litter the countryside as massacres continue here and in neighboring regions. Refugees are still fleeing to Sudan, and many areas are cut off from humanitarian aid. Hundreds of thousands of people are living in famine-like conditions, and the UN now says at least 2 million people in three Ethiopian states have fled their homes. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Istanbul.
Islamist militant attacks increased this past year in the Sahel region, leading to political instability that saw a coup in Mali, an attempted coup in Niger, and calls for Burkina Faso's president to resign. Burkina Faso experienced the deadliest terrorist attack since the conflict began, but analysts say the worst could yet to come. Harry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
2021 marks the ninth year of conflict in Africa's Western Sahel, and in Mali, Burkina Faso and Niger, violence has only worsened. A video recently posted online purports to show an attack on a military base in northern Burkina Faso that killed almost 50 military police in November. Terrorists said to be linked to Al-Qaeda can be seen firing heavy weapons from the backs of pickup trucks before burning and looting the base. Across Burkina Faso, Mali and Niger, fatalities from clashes between state forces and armed groups linked to Islamic State, Al-Qaeda and criminal gangs are up 18% since last year, according to data from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. The humanitarian impact has been huge, with close to 3.4 million people now displaced as a result of the conflict, according to the United Nations Refugee Agency. Amadou Agli from Burkina Faso fled the north of the country about 3 months ago after terrorists attacked nearby villages. He says he has a message for the world. He says his community is living through very hard times and appeals to any people, NGOs and governments around the world who can help them. He says they're suffering, a food crisis, a housing crisis, and that the children are unable to attend school. The year also saw a shift in the region's military structure, says Paul Melly, an analyst with London-based Chatham House, a research institution.
Start the process of moving towards a new pattern of French deployment where the Sahel armies in the G5 Sahel military structure are much more the frontline face, if you like, with the French in a more of a backup and special forces role, air support, intelligence.
France, which had 5,000 troops supporting Sahel security forces at the beginning of 2021, has said it will reduce that number to 3,000 by early 2022. Escalating insecurity has also plunged Sahel government into political turmoil. Mali saw a coup by military leader Assimi Goïta in May after street protests against insecurity. The West African political bloc, ECOWAS, along with France, have put pressure on Goïta to hold democratic elections in 2022. Protests against the government's handling of security in Burkina Faso in November forced the government to reshuffle military leadership and the cabinet. Andrew Leibovich is an analyst with the European Council on Foreign Relations.
What people are concerned about is the ongoing insecurity and the state of the security forces. So if that doesn't improve, then no, the change in government certainly will not be enough to appease the opposition.
Leibovich says analysts are also keeping an eye on attacks in Burkina Faso's border area with coastal West Africa states, including Benin and Ivory Coast.
So I do think at a minimum it's something to really be concerned about, it's something to watch out for and something to actively work against.
Meanwhile, in Niger, the emergence of civilian militia groups to fill the security gap could play a big role in 2022. In other Sahel countries, they have been used to assist the military, but have also been accused of human rights abuses, says Philippe M. Fraud, an associate professor at the University of Ottawa.
We've seen this in southwestern Niger recently, kind of community violence, which is spiraling and driven a lot by non-state armed groups. We see this in Burkina Faso as well, where we have the state, in fact, relying on groups like this.
After a difficult 2021, the Sahel conflict looks set to worsen as the new year begins. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou.
North Korea is about to enter its third year of severe COVID-19 lockdown. The pandemic measures are devastating the country's economy and look increasingly unsustainable, but no one knows when that will end, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
Kim Jong-un in December marked 10 years in power. The coronavirus is among his biggest challenges yet. But while Kim has an impressive arsenal to threaten the United States, he has fewer weapons to fight the pandemic. North Korea is one of only two countries yet to begin coronavirus vaccinations. Instead, its only tool is sealing itself off from the outside world. Ki Park is a North Korea healthcare expert who works at the Massachusetts-based Harvard Medical School.
And it works. Let's face it, the North Korea is able to seal its borders very, very tightly and control movement. And so we know these viruses cannot infect others when they can't move.
In the capital, Pyongyang, foreigners have almost completely left amid a border shutdown. North Koreans are subject to severe travel restrictions within the country. Along North Korea's border with China, trade is at a standstill. Lee Sang-yong, with the Daily NK, a Seoul-based publication, says it's taking a big toll on the economy. He says ordinary people now eat only two meals per day instead of three, and the ratio of rice to corn they consume is 3-7 instead of 7-3. Lee adds, it is clear the economic situation is getting worse. North Korea is reportedly trying to open its border to trade with China, its main economic lifeline. But that is tricky since both countries are embracing a zero-COVID approach. Park Won-gon is a North Korea expert at Seoul's Ewha University.
We are not sure exactly what kind of situation North Korea has faced at this very moment, but it is true that they are seeing very difficulties in near future, especially I think the first half of the next years. They have either opened their border or they have something to break through of these difficulties.
It could mean finally accepting international vaccines or the Pfizer pill, which early results indicate is very effective at combating the virus. But in a pandemic likely seen as a threat to his rule, Kim may instead feel the need to simply assert more control. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
For more on these stories and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Marking International Migrants Day a few weeks ago, the United Nations reports hostility and xenophobia are growing against migrants. It was that stigmatization and marginalization of migrants amid a raging pandemic is putting many lives at risk. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN agencies report 1/7 of the global population, or 1 billion people, are on the move. This number includes a record 281 million international migrants and 84 million people forcibly displaced by conflict, violence, and climate change. Director General of the International Organization for Migration, Antonio Vitorino, says many migrants embark on dangerous, life-threatening journeys in search of better economic opportunities. Others are forced from their homes because of natural and man-made disasters. He says many of these vulnerable people fall into the hands of unscrupulous people smugglers operating along migration routes worldwide. He says COVID-19 has worsened the difficulties migrants encounter.
Beyond the images of closed borders, separated families, and economic instability, the now two-year-old global pandemic has spawned a new wave of anti-migrant sentiment, and the increasing instrumentalization of migrants as tools in state policy. Both are unacceptable.
Instead of being a liability, he underlines the invaluable contributions migrants make across the world. He says migrant workers, nurses, healthcare workers have kept millions of people safe from COVID. He says migrant remittances have provided a lifeline for families made destitute by the pandemic.
The positive social and economic impact in the countries where they reside and the $540 billion remitted last year to communities in lower and middle-income countries are measures of the industry, entrepreneurship, and community from which we all benefit.
And yet he notes too many governments continue to exclude migrants from their pandemic, social, and economic recovery plans because of their legal status. UN and international organizations are appealing to governments to grant migrants access to life-saving COVID-19 vaccines. To do otherwise, they say, would pose a threat to the health of all people. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
2021 saw a new migrant crisis on Europe's borders as thousands of asylum seekers from the Middle East and Africa traveled to Belarus and tried to cross the border into Poland and the European Union. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Winter's sub-zero temperatures have not stopped the migrants at Poland's border. This group was rescued from a swamp by Polish soldiers. Medics said they were lucky to survive. Europe has long experienced migrant crises. But the emergency on Poland's border was manufactured, say analysts, with the weaponizing of migrants by Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko. Agnieszka Kubal is a migration rights expert at University College London.
In order to retaliate on the support for his political opponents by the EU countries, and also for the sanctions, the set of sanctions that were put by the EU on Belarus in the aftermath of the rigged elections.
Lukashenko relaxed visa restrictions for migrants from the Middle East and South Asia, including Iraq, Syria and Iran. Europe accused Lukashenko of luring them to Belarus and then directing or even ferrying them to the EU border. Lukashenko denies creating the crisis. The first migrants crossed into Lithuania in July. By August, far greater numbers were gathering on the Polish frontier. Polish authorities moved quickly to reinforce the border, imposing a state of emergency and blocking access to journalists and aid groups. The migrants seeking asylum in Poland were pushed back in often violent confrontations. Belarusian soldiers then forced the migrants back to the frontier, many reported being beaten and threatened with nowhere to go. This migrant did not want to give his name.
As you see, everybody almost dying of the cold, hunger and everything.
Poland accused Belarus of conducting a hybrid war. Polish Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki. He said, "We know that this is a fully planned operation which aims to disrupt the sovereignty of our country. Lukashenko's regime uses civilians as weapons of a hybrid war." Poland passed emergency laws to deal with the crisis. Again, analyst Agnieszka Kubal.
It gave priority of pushing people to the border, so the practice of pushbacks, over recognizing their asylum claims. On the one hand, Europe seems to be the beacon of human rights and democracy, and on the other hand, it is engaging in those very legally dubious practices.
Europe imposed further sanctions on Belarus. Meanwhile, Russia gave its support to President Lukashenko, blaming Europe for the humanitarian crisis. With the route to Europe effectively closed, the flow of migrants has slowed. Hundreds have been flown back to their home countries. But analysts believe the crisis is far from over. Again, Agnieszka Kubal.
Lukashenko will resort to the strategies that worked throughout the summer and autumn of a smaller groups of people being pushed across the green borders.
Geopolitical tensions and migrant pressures have converged to form a new crisis on Europe's eastern flank that looks set to continue into 2022. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
In search of a better life, many migrants cross from Africa to Europe through what has been dubbed, quote, the deadliest border in the world, unquote, the Mediterranean Sea. But despite the risks, the International Organization for Migration says the number of people crossing has doubled in the first half of this year to an estimated 77,000. For VOA, Ruud Eldendorp was one of the few reporters to accompany rescuers aboard the Ocean Viking, a rescue vessel in the Mediterranean Sea. He speaks of his experience the desperation and courage it takes for a migrant to attempt the perilous passage to Europe.
Try to inform yourself as much as possible about the situation, about how many migrants are trying to cross from North African shore to the South African shore of Europe. And then you get in touch with organizations who are doing the rescues. And then on board comes quite a rigorous training about how to operate on the ship, how to operate on the rescue boats, and also you get lots of information about international treaties and international regulations about how these migrant movements are recorded and what's their legal status.
Talking about information, how does these migrant ships get information? Because most times these migrants board these boats in secret.
But that's a very interesting point you're asking, because that's also from what I noticed from having been on board for quite long, is that that's the biggest challenge, because it's one small ship which has a fuel, 360 degrees fuel of 6 miles, and they're operating in a zone of 40,000 square kilometers. So it's less than looking for a needle in a haystack. So that's the one thing. So they're on continuous deck watch, as they call it. So they look around with binoculars. And then secondly, there are some other NGOs who fly around with airplanes, and then they also sometimes spot ships, and then they can relay that information to rescue ships who are near. So the main message behind it is that it's virtually impossible for rescue organizations to find those ships, because they're too small on a very big area, and that also reflects in the number of deaths that are reported on the Mediterranean Sea.
When a migrant boat is sighted, what is the preparation? What happens on board the ship?
That's comparable with a kind of military operation, because these situations are meticulously drilled, so everybody knows what to do and where to go. But the idea is that everybody gets in the location where they're supposed to be to be able to receive migrants. And then secondly, two or three smaller rescue boats will go out and will be lowered into the water, and they go to the location where a migrant ship has been spotted. It can be a few kilometers from the mother ship, and then has been on one of those rescue boats, and then starts a procedure to get them off the migrant ship, because those are wooden boats or rubber boats, and they're usually highly unstable because there are too many people on board. So then starts a procedure to get them off that small ship into the rescue boat. And that's also a very careful exercise to forecome that people don't fall into the water and drown. It's a very military, a very precise operation.
That's reporter Ruth Ermendorf speaking with me from Nairobi.
This is Science in a Minute.
When you think of planets, you probably picture them orbiting a star. But did you know there's a classification of planets called rogue, orphan, or nomad planets? These are planets that are much like those in our solar system, but rather than orbiting any star and being part of a planetary system, they are free-floating in space. Not many of these reclusive planets have been found, so they are considered to be quite rare. The European Southern Observatory reports that scientists who use several of their telescopes as well as other facilities have spotted at least 70 rogue planets that make up what they consider to be the largest group of orphan planets in the Milky Way. It's believed that these objects have been ejected from their original home planetary system at some time in the distant past. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports, or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
This has been a special New Year's Eve's International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedu Afo in Washington, wishing you a safe and productive New Year.
This is the voice of America. Washington, ba-ba-ba-zip.